The steamroller advance of the Syrian rebel alliance is a generational turning point for the Middle East.
The end of this regime is a defeat for all who enabled its barbarity and its corruption. None more than Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia.
Western observers say the interim leaders are saying the right things, but will their words translate into reality?
You know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, as they say. We'll see, but I think one can be hopeful.
Today is Tuesday, December 10th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
So this moment presents a historic opportunity, but it also carries considerable risks.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, cautiously optimistic over the stunning developments in Syria in recent days, noting Tuesday that the U.S. fully supports Syria's political transition process.
History shows how quickly moments of promise can descend into conflict and violence. ISIS will try to use this period to reestablish its capabilities, to create safe havens. As our precision strikes over the weekend demonstrate, we are determined not to let that happen.
Meanwhile, Israel pounded Syrian army bases on Tuesday in strikes, it says, aimed to keep weapons from falling into hostile hands. More now from Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan.
Israeli troops were seen moving into a UN-monitored buffer zone with Syria on Tuesday in the wake of the Assad regime's collapse. But Israel has denied going further. That's amid reports from Syrian sources that Israeli forces had penetrated beyond the demilitarized zone and to within 15 miles of the capital, Damascus. Since President Bashar al-Assad's flight on Sunday ended more than five decades of his family's rule, three security sources told Reuters Israelis had pushed beyond the area established following a 1973 war. One Syrian source said they had reached the town of Qatana, just a short drive from Damascus Airport. Israel calls the incursion into the buffer zone a temporary measure to ensure border security. But an Israeli military spokesperson had said troops had not pushed further and that Israel was not seeking conflict with the new authorities in Syria. Israeli rockets continued to pound Syrian army bases on Tuesday in strikes it says aimed to keep weapons from falling into hostile hands. Egypt, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia have condemned the Israeli incursion, saying the move would, quote, ruin Syria's chances of restoring security. On Monday, Assad's prime minister agreed to hand power to the rebel-led Salvation Government, an administration previously based in a pocket of rebel-held territory in northwest Syria. The steamroller advance of the militia alliance was a generational turning point for the Middle East. The civil war that began in 2011 killed hundreds of thousands and caused one of the biggest refugee crises of modern time. Cities were left bombed to rubble, the countryside depopulated, and the economy hollowed out by global sanctions. But in Damascus, major steps have been taken to return to normal life. Shops reopened, traffic returned to the roads, and street cleaners were out sweeping the streets. Minibuses of bank workers arrived to begin work for the first time since the overthrow. That's after many were caught without cash following the weekend's regime collapse. The central bank worker says she hopes it is the start of a new day, a new year, a new life, everything new. Everything is happy, this woman said. Even the air is different. She hopes safety and security returns to Syria and to be able to live again because Syrians deserve to live better.
That was Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. And while civilians look to restoring normal life,
thousands are tearing through concrete walls of Syria's horrific prisons in search for hidden cells in hopes of finding long-missing loved ones.
You know, the Syrian regime, Lori, was extremely brutal. And what we're seeing in these prisons now is even beyond anything that anyone has seen, certainly in a long, long time.
The stories are just devastating to even think that a human being could rule even in the most autocratic way, to this level is just, you know, and you know, it's like the curtain's been open now. And what, you know, the population in general seeing this feeling of joy. These people were just living in such agony, and of course, not knowing if their loved ones were obviously
still alive,
horribly tortured, or even worse.
Yeah. Well, everything that's happened in Syria over the past couple of days is going to have an impact on the wider Middle East. So let's broaden out this conversation. Joining us now from Cairo to help us do that is Paul Salem, Vice President for International Engagement with the Middle East Institute. He's also the organization's former president and CEO.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. You're very busy and there's a lot going on here.
That's right.
So obviously this was a striking situation that has these developments that have happened in just the past less than a week now. And already Syria has a new interim leader that they announced, a caretaker prime minister. What is your reaction to what has unfolded, and what can you tell us about this figure?
Well, first of all, obviously the developments of the last 9-10 days have surprised and stunned, I think, everybody involved. The HDS group itself was only planning a limited offensive to take part of Western Aleppo. They ended up basically toppling the entire regime in a few days, and the regime effectively melted away when tested. So everybody is quite surprised with what's happened. I would say so far I'm pleasantly surprised that the entire, you know, 9-10 days has happened with minimal bloodshed, minimal chaos, at a time when one could have imagined much worse. The person who has taken over as interim prime minister was the sort of the acting, or was sort of the minister or prime minister of the area of Idlib, which is an area in the northwest of the country where HDS and some other groups were. He's a technocrat. He's an engineer. He was brought in by the militant group to run that part of the country. He had been Minister of Development and Human Rights in that enclave as part of sort of an interim government that they had set up. So it's a positive step that somebody like him is in charge at least for a few months. There is concern that HDS, the rebel group itself, which certainly is the main armed group that has led this last assault, but they've done it peacefully. They're talking about a transition. They're talking about forming a government. So it's 2 days in, and there are a lot of pitfalls ahead. But so far, that's where we are.
Let's talk about the region itself. With Assad and that government gone, this has created a vacuum in the Middle East, a power vacuum. How does that affect everybody else?
Well, one shouldn't sort of overstate the vacuum. The Assad regime had become fairly vacuous and weak. It had lost control of much of Syria. The area that it nominally controlled, it only controlled it by virtue of support from Russia and from Iran and Hezbollah and other groups, and it controlled very, very loosely. It had become a narco state. There's a lot of gangs going on. So, yeah, there's a bit of a vacuum, but not a major one. But what has happened is a major impact on the region, particularly that Iran certainly has lost its longtime ally and its presence in Syria, which goes all the way back to 1980, basically. So, you know, 44 years. And Syria has been, for all of that period, Iran's only really Arab ally as a state. And Syria was the conduit through which Iran could arm and supply Hezbollah in Lebanon as well. So by losing the Assad regime, Iran loses a major ally, and it also loses its ability to support Hezbollah in Lebanon. So those are major blows to Iran. And I would say by far they are the biggest loser. Sure, Russia is a loser. Russia had entered Syria in 2015 to prevent regime change in Syria. And it really was a move to kind of block U.S. sort of global hegemony and what they perceived as a U.S. agenda of regime change in many different countries. So Russia has certainly lost an ally as well. And President Assad apparently is in Russia himself. I'm sure also President Putin is not happy that a popular uprising has unseated a dictator, because he is a dictator of sorts in Russia, and he's very afraid of popular uprisings in Russia as well.
We'll get back to Russia in a minute, but I want to focus a little bit on what you were saying about Iran and Hezbollah. It has been a bad year for both, has it not? And this is not going to be a turn of their fortune.
Absolutely. The loss, the decapitation and the loss of most of Hezbollah's capacity was a real body blow to Iran. Hezbollah was their main deterrent force against any Israeli attack on Iran or any American attack on Iran. They've lost that. They could have, had they not lost Syria, they could have thought down the road of rearming Hezbollah and retraining them and building them up again over the years. So it's been a very bad few months for Iran, for sure, losing Hezbollah and now losing Syria. And you add on to that the fact that Israel took out most of their air defenses in their attacks a number of weeks ago. And Iran now lies extremely vulnerable to an Israel which is certainly on the warpath, and an incoming Trump administration which is fairly aggressive as well.
Right. But it seems like also, wouldn't you say that an incoming Trump administration is friendlier when it comes to the Russia part of this?
Yes, certainly that is the case. President Trump is known to be fairly friendly to Russia, and that might translate into some arrangements between Russia and Ukraine. It might also translate into Russia being able to keep a naval base and an air base in northwestern Syria. That might be, the case. But the Trump administration is certainly very aggressive towards Iran, and Iran is the one that's feeling excessively vulnerable.
If the rebel groups follow through on what they've been saying, an inclusive government, not imposing heavy restrictions on women and such, what do you see for the future of Syria?
I think we can be fairly hopeful that this group, the HDS, will not impose radical extremist religious restrictions. They've been fairly moderate for at least 8-9 years now, so it's not exactly new. And they've been very vigilant over the last 10 days with the armed groups that they've sent into Aleppo and other places. And indeed, the treatment has been very positive to minority groups, to Christians, to others. It has not been sort of a radical Islamist takeover. And they have promised to be inclusive. The proof is in, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, as they say. We'll see. But I think one can be hopeful. The risk is more that Syria is a fairly large country. There are different armed groups in different parts of the country. There's 3 or 4 foreign armies, the Turkish army, the Russians, the Americans. So it's a very complex situation and a very weak, fairly collapsed state. So it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of international support for this transition that's starting off fairly hopefully to succeed over the long term.
It's really interesting, how it happened so quickly. And not only that, but what we're hearing is life is literally returning to normal. People are just happier, and life is just literally getting back to normal on the streets of, Damascus, as if they're just ready to start over, and they've been ready for so long. It's sort of unbelievable what we're hearing. But I'm wondering, We're hearing a lot about people really upset and worried about their loved ones that may have been in these prisons, and including, you know, there's a lot of talk about American journalist Austin Tice and if he's still alive and how to locate him. Is this a large task for all of these people to locate their loved ones, or is this something that could also be resolved quicker than we would imagine?
Well, as you say, I mean, the level of relief among most Syrians after not just years, but decades of one of the most brutal regimes on the planet, and we're seeing, you know, part of the brutality with the opening of the prison. So the sense of relief is tremendous and profound. And as you indicated, and as I was saying, the takeover of these groups and the collapse of the state has happened very peacefully. The government, the prime minister welcomed the change, which is quite interesting, unusual. But in Libya, after Gaddafi fell, the first few weeks were lovely. It happened in some other countries as well. And then a few weeks or months down the road, different armed groups started going at it, and life took a turn for the worse. But for now, yes, it is. The mood is very hopeful. A lot of refugees are streaming back from countries back to Syria. I think that, you know, once they're able to get to all of the prisons and the different levels, because there are still levels that they haven't gotten to in all the prisons, I mean, it's a very sad and macabre process. Those they find, many of them have been, you know, tortured for years, but they will find those who are still alive fairly quickly. And then one must assume, I suppose, that those they don't find are no longer with us. How rigorous that process will be, how will they be able to account for everybody, that's certainly a big sort of administrative task. I certainly think the international community can also, you know, send forensic experts and other types of, you know, agencies and experts that could help in that process. But it's a very, very traumatic you know, process to see what has been done over the past years. Mm.
You mentioned it in passing about the brutality of life in Syria over not just the 50 years of their rule, but the last 13 of the civil war, millions displaced, hundreds of thousands disappeared, hundreds of thousands killed in the fighting.
And so many or more are starving and in dire need of humanitarian aid.
Absolutely. I mean, you're describing a situation that has happened over the last 10, 13 years. It proved to be the, you know, currently the most brutal regime of the 21st century, I would say. And that's why a lot of people are extremely glad that it's gone.
Paul, thank you so very much for the time.
All right, take care.
That was Paul Salem, Vice President for International Engagement with the Middle East Institute and the organization's former president and CEO.
I think he really sums it up in the optimism that we have right now, but the warning that we've been here before in other countries and
the
this
cautious.
Could go right.
It's like you want to be happy and you're hoping it all works out, but it's way too early to know what the next chapter is. Hopefully it will be better for the people of Syria and really the entire region. It's nice to see that kind of joy in a place that has been so repressed.
Yeah. Right? Repressed. Yeah. It's the only word you can think of.
Yeah. Let's hope for the best for all of them.
This has been The Issue from The Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X and on Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, go to our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.